From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. As we return from the weekend and the July 4th holiday, CAP Radio is continuing to track several wildfires across Northern California. The Thompson Fire, which burned across Butte County last week, is nearly 100% contained, according to CAL FIRE. But several others are continuing to burn, from the Pay Fire in El Dorado County to the Royal Fire in Placer County. Here to give us the latest is CAL FIRE Deputy Chief Isaac Sanchez. Chief Sanchez, thanks for joining us on Insight.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Chris.
Can you tell us the latest on some of the fires burning in Northern California, including the Pay Fire in El Dorado County?
Yeah, so as of this morning, let's see, we are looking at about 77 acres on the Pay, which is actually good news, right? I mean, you know, these fires are concerning, you know, relative to how close they are to you. And so you don't necessarily need a big number to be concerned about it. But 77 acres and 35% contained as of this morning.
That's great to hear. And then I understand the Royal Fire, that's outside of your jurisdiction. Where would people go to get information on that?
Yeah, so while CAL FIRE is there assisting our cooperators, we assist one another regularly on these types of fires. The Tahoe National Forest is the point of contact for information on that incident.
Very good. And what are we looking at as far as conditions here in the next couple of days? I mean, are we going to see the winds pick up? How's the weather going to affect firefighting?
Well, you know, aside from the obvious, right, the extreme heat that we're seeing, and of course the impacts that that heat has on not only firefighting efforts but on the fuel that are potentially going to be burning. You know, we're looking at we're always concerned about the wind, right? We're always concerned about fuel moistures and things like that as well that come along with that heat.
At this point, are there any remaining threats to buildings or homes with these fires?
You know, as long as there is an uncontrolled fire burning, there's always a concern, right? And in many of the places that we protect, while many of them are open space, obviously, there's always communities nearby. And so anytime you have fire burning, that's uncontrolled fire, it's a concern.
I know with the Royal Fire, the Placer County Sheriff's Office said that 13 hikers briefly went missing in the fire zone before being found and let out safely an hour later. If someone finds themselves caught out in a fire zone like that, if they're hiking, what should they do to stay safe?
Yeah, you know what? It all starts with preparation, right? Knowing where you're going, knowing the threats and the conditions that you'll be hiking in, right? That's one of them. The second is let people know where you're at and what you're going to be doing. And then, of course, there's always, how do you call for help? And, of course, if you're hiking in an area with cell phone, you always call for help if there's a need. But if you're going to be in an area that has limited cell coverage, have a plan B, some sort of a rescue beacon or a way that you're able to reach out and request help. You know, obviously, these are very dynamic situations. No one plans on there being a fire or being impacted by a fire, but you have to be prepared just in case.
You know, most people, fortunately, these fires are a little distance from them, but they might be experiencing some of the impacts to air quality. How are these fires impacting our air right now?
You know, not in a good way, right? I mean, and again, this is all relative to how you are impacted by them. If, you know, typically speaking, most of the community recognizes that it's a problem. You'll maybe feel some discomfort. You'll notice the smell of smoke depending on how close you are. But there are folks, the elderly, and of course, folks with pre-existing conditions that can be adversely impacted by wildfire smoke. So are they being impacted? Absolutely. Again, anytime you have large uncontrolled fires, you have the potential for impacting communities, not only in the immediate area of the fire, but, you know, at a distance. We see the smoke drifting to different parts of the state that are nowhere near the fire. And of course, we have to be concerned and make people aware that the possibility of having an adverse reaction to the smoke is a possibility.
You know, we just wrapped up the 4th of July holiday and CAL FIRE. Before that, they had warned people, of course, to be safe. They had reiterated the state's zero tolerance policy for selling and using illegal fireworks. I'm wondering, did the agency see a lot of trouble? What was the experience like over the holiday?
You know, it's always a concern, right? I mean, when we see the 4th of July rolling around, we're constantly concerned about that. And it doesn't have to be the 4th of July. Illegal fireworks are always a concern. The Office of the State Fire Marshal made a record bust in L.A. County in the week, I believe, leading up to the 4th of July. But, you know, it's always in the back of our head. Some years it happens. We respond to fires that are caused by firework activity. And some years we don't. But when you look at it as on a statewide basis, there's always something happening every single day. And the 4th of July just kind of makes you pay a little closer attention as individual firefighters, right? We can assume that something is going to happen. We expect that something is going to happen as a result of illegal fireworks. When it does, we're obviously prepared. And when it doesn't, we kind of breathe a sigh of relief and say, okay, well, let's get ready for the next one.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Deputy Chief Isaac Sanchez from CAL FIRE about the wildfires that are currently burning across Northern California. You know, Chief, a moment ago we talked about this extensive, persistent heat wave that we have across the state and the West. With that, I'm wondering, can you tell us a little bit about the fire crews? How are they dealing with that? How does your agency sustain its efforts given the pressure that your personnel are under?
Yeah, again, if it goes back to preparation, right? Making sure that we have the resources available to us to be able to go out and aggressively fight those fires. But when we're talking about doing it in extreme heat like this, right, this is where physical conditioning absolutely comes into play. This is not an easy career choice, right? This is not something that we can just kind of fake our way through. You have to be prepared for these types of eventualities. And if it doesn't happen today or this year, it's going to happen eventually, right? You're going to be fighting fire in these types of conditions. But also above and beyond that personal responsibility that we have as firefighters, when large-scale fires do break out, we do have appropriate work rest cycles. In other words, you know, a crew can expect, let me back up a little bit. Outside of the initial attack phases, when a fire does go extended, you're going to be working, right? You're going to be there until those resources start showing up to relieve you. But once those resources are in place, there is a work rest cycle where folks can expect to work for 24 hours straight, but also to be off for 24 hours in order to recover and, of course, prepare for the next day's shift.
I know that CAL FIRE does conduct at least some nighttime aerial firefighting. Does that help avoid some of these issues that we're talking about, the sort of the overheating? Does that help at all in this issue?
Well, you know, when the sun goes down, there's obviously that drop in temperature and hopefully a rise in the humidity, which makes things a little more comfortable, right? But we're still talking a very arduous and a very grueling, physically demanding operation, right, on the firefighters on the ground. When it comes to the night fire, the aerial operation that we're able to continue when the sun goes down, that absolutely pays dividends, right? Because historically, we used to see with the drop in temperature and the rise in humidities overnight, we would see a change in fire behavior. It would typically lay down and we could make, you know, great progress overnight once the sun went down. But, you know, in recent history with the effects of climate change, we're seeing that the fire activity is continuing through the night and aggressive fire behavior is continuing through the night. And so in order to be able to have those night flying helicopters available to us, it absolutely is a wonderful advantage that we have and we're able to maintain that aggressive firefight through the night.
You know, the fire crews are out there, but you also have evacuees, people who are displaced because of these fires. If they have to sleep in their cars or find shelter without air conditioning, are there ways that they can also prepare for this and stay cool?
Yeah, you know, and evacuees are always at the front of our minds, right? We have to put the fire out and we have to make sure that we're doing it in an aggressive but safe manner. But the evacuees are always a concern, right? They're always at the forefront of our minds. We don't want to have to force people out of their homes. But at the same time, when we do, we want to make sure that they're reintroduced back into the area as quickly as possible. So, you know, each county has its own specific set up as far as accommodating folks that have to be evacuated. And typically it's in cooperation with, you know, things, organizations like the American Red Cross that set up temporary evacuation points and evacuation centers to care for folks. But what we see typically is in many areas, folks evacuate to family, they evacuate to friends in a safer area. But for those that don't have that type of a system or that type of support network, the American Red Cross typically handles evacuations and we've seen everything anything from having folks stay overnight at evacuation centers where they can get receive the support and services that they need, to you know the American Red Cross setting folks up at hotels in order to again be in a safe location but still have access.
Well, speaking of evacuees, you certainly rely on people heeding evacuation orders. How has that been going with the recent fires? Are people listening to what the authorities are saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's generally the case, right? There are the outliers, the folks that don't want to leave. And that is something that we have to take into consideration, right? Because when folks decide to change their mind, it's typically at a later date when it's a little more dangerous to evacuate. We typically will have to reassign resources from the firefight to account for that. We have priorities, right? And the number one priority that every fire department has, and I feel comfortable saying this, is the protection of life. And when folks don't heed those early evacuation warnings, it's potentially going to put us in a situation to where we have to risk our well-being in order to effect a rescue. And we're always going to do that. That is our primary responsibility. But the effect of having to do that is that we have to pull resources from the firefight, which potentially could give the fire additional opportunities to grow and impact the community. So we always encourage early evacuation, fully recognize that there may be folks that do not.
In our last minute or so, I want to give our listeners just a reminder, especially given the heat, given the dry conditions, what steps can they take to prevent fires and also to make their properties more fire resistant?
Sure. You know what? I'll tackle that first one. It's the biggest thing that I try to preach and try to make the public aware of is their role in preventing the next fire. A vast majority, well over 90% of vegetation fires are caused by human activity. That can be doing defensible space clearance. That can be a car accident. That can be any number of things that we can address through behavior changes, right? But it starts with awareness. Be aware that your actions do have an impact on preventing the next vegetation fire that could potentially impact yourselves and your community. But when it comes to doing your defensible space clearance, protecting your property, protecting your homes, and by extension, yourselves and your families, we got to make sure that that's getting done. Not only does it give your home an opportunity to survive a fire, but it also gives the firefighters an opportunity to protect your home if we're in a situation where we have to, because that's our number two priority, right? First, we protect lives, and then we protect property. And we're always going to do that. We do prioritize homes. We do triage homes. And the homes that we feel we can make a difference at, we will absolutely commit those resources. And the best way to do that is to ensure that you're doing your defensible space clearance in a responsible manner and in an appropriate manner.
And of course, if fires turn into something where people actually do need to leave their home, what are just a few of the basics that people should remember to bring with them?
The things that you need, right? Your medications, bring your pets, bring your food and the medications that your pets need, your important documentation, the things that are irreplaceable. But it's not just knowing what to bring. It's to have a plan together well in advance, because when you receive the alert or you receive a knock at the door and it is a pressing issue, that is not the time to be making those types of decisions and identifying what you need. Make those preparations, but make them well in advance of that call or that knock ever coming.
Well, great advice, Chief Sanchez. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Isaac Sanchez is a Deputy Chief of Communications for CAL FIRE, giving us the latest updates on wildfire conditions across Northern California. Up next, Governor Gavin Newsom late last week pulled the plug on a ballot measure meant to compete with the Prop 47 reform initiative, calling for tougher theft and drug penalties. We'll break down these latest developments. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Chris Nichols.